I'm Jason Wright, and this is the Texas Titans Podcast, where I sit down with peak performers from all walks of life, looking for their secrets to success. I hope you enjoy the conversation here on the Texas Titans Podcast. Hey folks, really quick before we get started, I want to tell you about today's sponsor. It is Good Works Landscaping, and let me tell you from first-hand experience, they in fact do great works. They completely redefined my backyard. And let me tell you something, just between you and me and the fence post and all the incredible stuff growing in my backyard, Mrs. Wright, who I love and adore, I have the most amazing wife on earth, but she can be a challenge to please when it comes to home improvement projects and that sort of thing. She has impeccable taste, impeccable standards, except for maybe in husbands, but nonetheless, she has exquisite taste, and she loves the work that Good Works did for us. So please check them out. You can go to goodworkslandscaping.com to contact them. Their phone number is 903-920-8105. The owner, Josh Barb, is a professional horticulturalist. He's a graduate of Kansas State. He has years, over a decade of experience, and just an incredibly good man. He and his wife, Amanda, are building a superb company that's built on talent, artistry, and integrity. They do what they say they're going to do when they say they're going to do it, and then a little extra. I could not be happier with them. I could not be happier to have them as a sponsor and now partner of the Texas Titan Podcast. So please, folks, go out, check out. This spring is coming up. There's planting you need to be doing right now. So call Josh and check them out. You can do that at 903-920-8105. Call them, get started, get ready, get a jump on spring. Good Works Landscaping. Tell them that Jason from Texas Titans sent you. Thanks so much. Well, howdy, folks, and welcome to Season 3 of the Texas Titans Podcast. Happy New Year. I am so grateful for you tuning in to this very, very special New Year's episode of the Texas Titans Podcast. Today's guest is Tiger Kaufman. Now, Tiger Kaufman will never pitch for the Houston Astros. In fact, Tiger Kaufman these days can barely even hold a baseball. However, Tiger Kaufman does not let that stop him in his life's mission to pronounce and profess his faith in Jesus Christ. This is one of the best, most meaningful episodes of the Texas Titans Podcast I've ever had the opportunity to record. While his name is Tiger Kaufman, this guy has the heart of a lion, if ever anyone did. And look, you don't have to be a believer to enjoy this episode, so please don't skip, don't go, don't delete it, don't move on and wait for the next episode. This is an episode about courage, about attitude, and at a time in our world where we need somebody to show us that no matter what you're going through, someone else might be going through something a little more troubling, and it's all about your attitude and your life's mission, and Tiger Kaufman delivers that. So folks, enjoy this episode. Thank you for being here. Have an incredible 2021. Thanks. All right. Tiger Kaufman, we're recording now, brother. Let's just keep the conversation going. First of all, I want to tell you, thank you so much for being here. I'm excited to see you all covered up in your Astros orange. As a matter of fact, it gives me a great reason to give a shout out to, probably now that I've met you, the second biggest Astros fan I know, which is Kenneth DePew. He's a buddy of mine. So Kenneth, I know you'll enjoy this episode because I got a fellow Astros fanatic on today. So thanks for being here, awesome. Tiger.
Well, I appreciate it, man. My shirt, I got this shirt that a friend of mine bought it for me, and it says, "All I need today is a little bit of Astros and a whole lot of Jesus." It's in a cross, and it's got a bunch of different pictures of the different Astros on it. So
very cool.
It's one of my favorite shirts. So.
Well, you know, something that is pretty cool about my history with the Astros. So whenever I was growing up, I grew up in Sulphur Springs. Yeah. And, you know, back in the day, the Rangers they didn't win a lot of games. And so therefore, they didn't televise a lot of their games. They always got blacked out in Dallas. Right. And so The only baseball that I grew up watching for the most part was the Atlanta Braves. And so that was my team growing up, and Dale Murphy was my hero. And my granddad took me to the Astrodome to watch the Houston Astros play the Atlanta Braves. And so the Houston Astros were the first National League team, of course, they were in the National League way back then, first National League team that I ever saw play live. And I got to go to the Astrodome. And so I've got a little bit of history with the Astros myself.
That's awesome. A lot of good memories at the Astrodome for me, man. When I was a kid, that was just like the mecca of baseball for
Oh,
me.
yeah.
So
Oh,
it was
yeah.
awesome. We used to
Well,
go to Astro World, which was an
oh,
amusement
yeah.
park. And it was what we'd go to Astro World, like we'd get there at 10 in the morning and stay till about 4:30, and then we'd walk across. They had this little walkway.
Yeah.
We'd walk across the freeway and go to the Astros game at night. So it was awesome.
I forgot about Astro World. I haven't thought about that in forever, man. I completely forgot about Astro World.
Yeah, they
God.
tore it down several years ago, unfortunately, but yeah, it was a lot of fun.
Wow. Well,
And the Ranger ballpark was my second professional stadium to ever go to. So
yep.
that's one of my dreams, is to go to all the stadiums. And my ultimate dream would be go to two games in every stadium.
Oh.
One while they played the Astros so I could represent my team, and then one when they played somebody else so I could be a Braves fan for the day
Right.
or whatever. So
Right. Well, we definitely share an affinity for baseball. I grew up, baseball was my sport. I loved it. And like I told you when I talked to you last, you're the second pitcher I've had on the program. Talking about the Atlanta Braves, Josh Tomlin, who's a friend of mine and a pitcher for the Braves, he's been on the show, and I'm actually going to try to get him back on as to talk to him about preparing for spring training. And I guess that's kind of where your story begins, man, is on the pitcher's mound. And so, why don't you just take us from that fateful day when you were what, 12, 13? How old were you?
13. I
13
was
years old,
13.
which, by the way, I don't know about you, man, but I don't think it'll ever get any better than playing baseball. 12, 13 is that's probably around Pony League, right? Little League, Pony League. Yeah. Those were the days, brother. I miss it so much. So tell us about that faithful day, and then just you take the microphone. I want this audience to hear your story because it's an incredible story, of leadership, fortitude, faith, I want to dig into just kind of, I know your faith walk, but we'll certainly talk about that. But then also some of the just the mental just fortitude that you have put forth, Tiger, to walk through this battle that you have, man. I'm so excited to hear the story. So with that, man, take it away.
I appreciate it, brother. And yeah, I born and raised here in Houston, and I have a very big family. I have three brothers and two sisters, and I'm the fifth in line. When my mom and dad got married, they each had two kids, and then together they had me and my younger brother, Sonny. So there were six of us. And so growing up, family was very important. And then when I was about five or six, when I started playing T-ball, and just absolutely loved it. I mean, baseball just be that's when baseball was it for me. And I, just remember those days in T-ball. And, my dad likes to tell the story in T-ball. Every time I would hit the ball and ran, I would tilt my head back so my helmet would fall off to make it look like I was running faster. And just loved it. And I played T-ball for 2 years. And then when I was about eight, when I started kid pitch, like here in Houston, we didn't have coach pitch or machine pitch. We went straight from T-ball to kid pitch.
Oh, wow.
And so I started pitching and just loved it. And that faithful day when I was 13 years old, I was pitching in the game. I played for the Yankees at the time, and we were playing the Mets. And about the third inning, I believe it was, a buddy of mine, Jaime, came up to bat. And my dad would sit in the stands and he would give me the signs on what pitch to throw instead of relying on my catcher to do it. And I didn't think to change up the signs when I played against my friends because Jaime looked right at my dad, so he knew what pitch was coming.
Yeah.
So he had fouled off about five or six pitches. And of course, we're kind of joking with each other. And, you know, my dad, you know, gave me the sign for a four-seam fastball. And I just, you know, went through the windup and I threw it. And when I, you know, finished through the windup, I heard the ball hit the bat. And I look up and the ball was right there. Just bam, just right in the face. And so all I remember seeing the baseball. And next thing I remember, I'm on the pitcher's mound, bleeding everywhere. And Jaime's standing over me. He's going, dude, I'm sorry. I'm like, what happened? I was kind of dazed. And so, of course, they get me to the hospital. But my eye was really swollen, almost swollen shut. So when I got to the ER, they actually thought that my eye bone possibly was broken as well. Because the x-ray, they couldn't see the eye bones. They did a CAT scan. And the CAT scan showed, obviously, my nose was broken, but it showed a bunch of tumors in the left side of my neck. And so the doctors came out and they asked my mom and dad, they said, well, how long have these tumors been there? And of course, we're like, what tumors? Because I mean, I'd been perfectly healthy. Like I was never sick. I never had any issues, no problems with it at all. And they said, well, you know, these tumors are in there. We need to get them out to, you know, see if they're cancerous or benign and see what's going on. And so they did the surgery to fix my nose. And then they did a few days later, did the surgery to take the tumors out. Well, there was three main ones in my neck and they got all of two of them. But the third one was so far up in behind my jawbone that they got most of it, but they had to leave a little bit of it in. And the doctor comes in, you know, the room after surgery and I'm, you know, awake and tells me that the tumors were benign. He said, but you have a tumor disease called neurofibromatosis. He said that basically means tumors of the nerves. He said, you got tumors on the nerves and in your neck. And so I just kind of thought at that point that was going to be it, that I would just have to, you know, go to the doctor every so often or whatnot. Well, 2 years later, they did another CT scan just for follow-up, and the tumor that they left in had grown back and was quite large. And the doctor said, in order to get this tumor out, because it's so far in behind your jawbone, we actually have to break your jaw. And it was, his name was Dr. Lee. He's an Oriental doctor, just awesome, awesome guy. He used to tell me that Bruce Lee was his long lost brother. And I was like, okay, yeah, whatever. And so he says, to get this tumor out, we have to go in, we'll break your jaw, we'll take the tumor out, you know, your mouth be wired shut for about 6 weeks, no problem. And I'm kind of like, wait a second, why are my mouth shut? Like, I'm skinny already. I was like, I can't go 6 weeks with my mouth wired shut. I'll blow away.
Right.
And so we go get ready for surgery. And my nurse comes in and started the IV with just the regular saline solution, you know, no medicine or anything yet. And, you know, mom and dad had, you know, already gone back out to the waiting room. I was like, you know, I love you. I'll see you after surgery. And after the nurses started the IV, walked out, this other nurse walks in and she was just wearing white scrubs. She had long blonde hair, just beautiful. And of course, I'm 15 years old, so I'm like, man, this nurse is hot. Like, hello, nurse. And she says, what are you in for? I said, well, I play baseball, and you know, my goal was to be the next Nolan Ryan. I was pitching in a game, and the guy hit the ball and hit me in the face and broke my nose, and they found these tumors. And she looked at me, and she said, God broke your nose. Oh, wow. And I was like, no, Jaime broke my nose, but thanks for playing. Right. She said, you don't understand, but God has a plan and a purpose for your life. And she walked out. And, you know, Jason, my first thought was, why would God, my family didn't go to church. Like, I'd gone to vacation Bible school with a friend of mine when I was 8. And my grandma went, you know, when I was 11, I went a couple of times with her. But, you know, church wasn't something that my family really did. And I thought, well, you know, why would God break my nose? I was a good kid. Like, since I wanted to play professional baseball, like, I didn't, you know, do anything bad. Like, I didn't drink. I didn't smoke. I didn't dip. I didn't do, you know, I was like, why would God break my nose? And Right. And she said, you know, God has a plan and a purpose for your life. And she walked out. And my thought was, okay, she's beautiful, but she's you know, crazy. God wouldn't break my nose. Right. And I was going to surgery. I ended up being in surgery for 12 hours because this tumor was 6.5 inches long and wrapped around every nerve for the left side of my face.
Oh, God.
And so the doctor, you know, they did the surgery and, you know, comes in after surgery and, you know, he's got the chart open and he's kind of shaking his head and he closes it. And he said, "Tiger, you're very lucky." And I was like, "You know, my mouth's wired shut. I look like a mummy. My face is all wrapped up." And I was like, how can you say I'm lucky?" He said, "This tumor was so strategically located." He said, "And you were born with them. They've been there since the day you were born." He said, "If you hadn't have broken your nose, you wouldn't have found these tumors until it was too late." He said, "This tumor was about 2 centimeters from the base of your brain." He said, "If you hadn't have broken your nose, you probably would have been dead by the time you were 18. Oh, wow. And of course, that just, you know, shot. I was like, "What?" Like, wow. And it was in my head. I could see that lady standing there saying, "God broke your nose." And so when the doctor left, I told my mom and dad, I said, "You know, this sounds weird, but before surgery, this lady came in and she told me that God broke my nose because God has a plan for my life." And of course, my dad, he was like, "Oh, she's probably Jehovah Witness. Don't listen to that." Like, he said the same thing. Like, "Why would God break your nose?" And, you know, that just kept resonating in my head. Like, I kept thinking, like, why would God break my nose? You know, and I got out of the hospital and mouth wired shut and, you know, pizza in a blender mixed with some Dr. Pepper. It's pretty good when you got a broken jaw. Wow. You know,
I'll take your word for it, Tiger.
6 weeks with no solid food, man, you get desperate. So, and shortly after that, a friend of mine on April 12th, 1988, it was my dad's birthday, and a friend of mine named Brett in my apartment complex said, "Hey, man, they're having this big rally at my church tonight for the youth group. Do you want to come?" And I was like, "Well, no, it's my dad's birthday, and, you know, family's coming over to celebrate his birthday, so, you know, I'm going to stay here." And he's like, "But, you know," he's like, "there's going to be free pizza and girls." And, of course, again, I'm 15 now, and I'm like, "Free pizza, girls. All right, Dad, I love you. Happy birthday. I'm going to church." He's like, "You're going where?" I was like, "I'm going to church with Brett. They're having a thing for the youth." And he was like, "Well, okay." And I went to, it was at Metropolitan Baptist Church, and there was probably 2,000 teenagers there. It must have been, because it was packed. And a guy named Morgan Cryer led worship, and another guy named Tierce Green was speaking. And of course, I'm not really paying attention. I'm more interested in girls at that point. And, you know, I'm just kind of looking around, and, you know, he's speaking, and I hear him say, "And, you know, God loves you. God has a plan and a purpose for your life." And it was just like, you know, in the old, like, cartoons or shows where, you know, so you'd see somebody where they have that aha moment. Like, I just, like, lit up. I was like, "What did he just say? You know, God loves a plan and a purpose for life." And so then I started paying attention, and he just kind of talked about how God loves us. And sometimes God allows things to happen in our lives so that he can show us his plan. It's kind of like to get our attention. Yep. And he shared Jeremiah 29:11. Mm-hmm. "You know, I know the plans I have for you, declares the Lord, plans to prosper you, not to harm you, plans to give you a hope and a future." And he went through the plan of salvation, and he read James. He also went into James 1:2-4, you know, that says, "Consider it joy when you face trials of many kinds, for we know the testing of our faith develops perseverance, and perseverance must complete its work so that you may be mature in Christ." And at that point, Jason, it was like nobody else was in that auditorium. It was just me and tears. You know, I was just zoned in. And at the end, when they gave, you know, the altar call, like, I couldn't get down fast enough. And I went down, and there was an older high school student there named Chris. And I talked with him, and man, we went in the back, and I kind of shared with him, you know, about breaking my nose and finding the tumors. And this lady saying, "God broke my nose." And, you know, and then this guy says, "God has a plan for my life." I'm like, and he, you know, we prayed right there. And that was the night I prayed to receive Christ, and started getting involved in the youth group, and and getting going, you know, going to youth group on Wednesdays and church on Sunday. And, you know, one of the things, our youth minister at the time was a guy named Gary Sills. And Gary would always tell us, he said, you know, anchor your relationship with the Lord deep while you're young, because the deeper you anchor now, the stronger you'll be able to stand the storms later in life. And, you know, again, being 15, like, I'm like, storms of life, like, you know, when you're 15, you're invincible. Nothing bad's ever going to happen. Right. You're, you know, my dream then was, okay, I'm going to play for the Astros. And now that I'm a Christian, I'm going to do a Christian sports camp during the off season. So, I mean, I had it all planned out. And so just continued to do that. And I would invite my parents to come to church with me, and my siblings, and none of them would, you know, most of them want to come. My parents came a couple of times, but 2 years after about 6 months after I prayed to receive Christ, I went back to the doctor for a follow-up visit, and my doctor's office was right next to the hospital. So after my doctor's visit, I went over to the hospital, and I went down to the OR, and I found the lady that was my nurse that day that started the IV. And I said, "Where's that other nurse that walked in my room after you?" And she looked at me and she said, "What nurse?" I said, "Y'all passed in the doorway." She long blonde hair. She's about 5'4", 5'5". And she said, "Tiger, nobody walked in the room after me." She's like, "I stood right outside your door." I said, "No, this blonde-headed nurse came in and started talking to me." And she said, "We haven't had a blonde-headed nurse work down here in the OR in a couple of years. So nobody came in your room." And Jason, as sure as I can see you and you can see me, I saw this lady in my room. And, you know, some people say, well, you were probably already on meds. All the medicine they had was saline. And so I fully believe that that was an angel that God placed in my path to plant that seed. And, wow. You know, of course, like I said, I continued playing baseball. My junior year of high school, I was in Fellowship of Christian Athletes. And I ran for president, and I won. I was shocked because there was a senior named Steve Tanner that went to ETBU with me too that was running. I didn't think there's any way in the world I would be, but I did. And so I started leading Bible study, you know, once a week for my fellow high school students. And, you know, I'd bring in my youth minister would come some, but there was just something about that that I just fell in love with, like, more than I loved baseball. And my senior year, I was talking to our youth minister, Phil Wilson was our youth minister at that time. And I was talking to him and one of the youth interns at the time. And I said, there's just something about, you know, when I get to lead Bible study and tell my friends about Jesus that I love more than stepping on the pitcher's mound. Like, it gave me more of a rush than playing baseball. And I never thought anything would come in the place of baseball. And one of the interns said, well, maybe God's calling you to ministry. And I was like, no way. You know, I wasn't born, you know, I wasn't, you know, raised in church. I didn't know all the Bible stories. Like, I still didn't know the difference between the Old Testament and the New Testament. Like, I, you know, was it David that built the ark and Noah that had the temple? You know, I didn't, you know, it's like, why would, you know, God called me to ministry. And right. Lou Mizell said, you know, God doesn't call the qualified, he qualifies the called. And I was just, man, I just sank with me. And I graduated from high school in 91. And I was going to take a year off of college. And I decided I was no longer going to, you know, go after playing baseball. I was going to focus on ministry. And in 92 is when I answered the call. It's like, okay, God, if this is what you want me to do, then I'll do it. Like, I won't play baseball, you know, anymore. I'll focus on that. And that's when I, you know, went to ETBU. And in 93, I was an intern with a youth group at the Met that summer. And on Monday nights, we had visitation, like, you know, Baptist churches. We have Monday night visitation. And we went to visit some students. I had some junior high students with me, and we went and visited students. And my parents had come to visit church that Sunday, August 1st, and they didn't fill out a visitor's card. So I filled one out for them. And my buddy Matt Coleman was like, your parents aren't here? You know, why are you filling it out? It's like, well, they were here before, but they didn't fill one out, and the church has got to have a record of it. And he's like, well, that's lying. I said, no, I'm not lying. I'm Tiger. And so that night, a couple adults went and visited my parents. And when we got back from a visitation, we were all sitting around talking, and this older gentleman came over, and he's like, we went and visited your parents tonight. And I was kind of like frozen. I was like, okay, they didn't know y'all were coming, so I didn't know what to pray to receive Christ tonight. And man, that was just like, I just started crying, and my friends, because we'd been praying since I, you know, got saved in 88, you know, so yeah. 5 years, we were praying. And so the next day at church, our pastor, Kurt Dodd, came over and he said, you know, I heard your parents prayed to receive Christ last night, and they want to get baptized Sunday. And I was like, yes, sir. You know, and, you know, he gives me a big hug. He's like, man, that's awesome. That's exciting. He said, do you want to baptize them? I said, yeah, they're getting baptized this Sunday. He said, no, do you want to baptize them? I was like, let me pray about it. Yeah. And so that Sunday, August 8th, 1993, the first person I ever baptized was my mom. And shortly after that was my dad. And that's even more powerful for me now, because we lost my mom 2 years ago, and it hurts, and it, man, I'm sad. I miss her dearly, because we were, you know, I always told people that my mom and I were tighter than wet spandex socks on a fat lady. but I know that she, I know that she's in heaven, and so I know that I'll see her again one day, and so that helps a little bit. And like I said, I continued, you know, through ETBU. And in 1995, they did some MRIs and found some tumors on the top of my top three vertebrae in my spinal cord. And so they took those out. And again, those were benign, which was, you know, which is good. And I still didn't have any problems with the tumors. I started to have a little bit of pain in my legs occasionally, but nothing major. And I graduated from ETBU. Right out of ETBU, I lived in Nacogdoches for a year, and I was a youth minister at Bethel Baptist Church in Appleby, right outside of NAC. And my roommate, Jamie Kubiak, went to SFA. And so I, you know, we shared an apartment, and it was just, that was an awesome time. But I left there because I felt like God wanted me to, you know, move back to Houston and travel and speak instead of just being at one church. And so I came home and started doing that. God started opening doors, and I started getting to, you know, share my story and speak at different youth events and, you know, disciple nows and, you know, fifth quarters and all that. And it was awesome. And I got married in 2002. And in 2004, I started having numbness in my fingertips. It started, I'd gone to the movies, and I was reaching for popcorn. And when I looked down, there was no popcorn in my hand. It was kind of weird. And so I called my doctor at MD Anderson and told him what was going on. And we did an MRI, and he said, there's some more tumors growing on top three vertebrae. So we need to go back in again and get these tumors out. He said, you know, you'll be in surgery for, you know, 5 or 6 hours, then you'll probably be in the hospital for about 4 or 5 days, because, you know, they'd already gone in once before, so it wouldn't be as bad. And when they cut me open, there was actually 7 tumors, and oh, God. 4 of them were so woven into the spinal cord at C4, 5, 6, 7, that it didn't show up on the MRI. And when I woke up from, I ended up being in surgery for 16 hours. And when I woke up from surgery, I felt like I was going to get sick and vomit. So I was trying to roll over, but I couldn't move. Like, I couldn't roll myself over. Thankfully, there was a nurse there, and she rolled me over so I wouldn't choke on my vomit. And yeah. When she rolled me back, like, I was kind of like shocked. I was scared, because I didn't know what happened. Like, why couldn't I roll over myself? And she said, you know, surgery didn't go as planned. There were some complications, but the doctor will be in and talk to you in a little bit. And I was like, okay. And of course, I'm still kind of groggy in and out, you know, sleeping from the anesthesia. And I remember as I went back to sleep, I just had this incredible peace come over me. And I just felt like, I just felt the Lord saying, Tiger, don't worry about what the doctor tells you. You're going to be okay. And, you know, I'm kind of like, okay, God, I trust you. And when I woke up and the anesthesia had worn off and I was kind of alert and awake and aware, the doctor comes in. And of course, my wife at the time was there, my mom. Basically, there was so much trauma to the spinal cord. He said that, Tiger, you'll probably never walk again. From the neck down, I couldn't do anything. I couldn't scratch my nose. I couldn't do anything for myself. And of course, my wife is crying. My mom is crying. And I told the doctor, I said, I'm going to walk out of this hospital. And he said, you know, Tiger, I know you're trying to be strong for your family. He said, but medically speaking, I don't think it's going to happen. There was two, you know, the spinal cord, you know, there's the spinal cord and around that is the spinal column, which is bone. And in between my spinal cord and the bone is where the tumors were growing. And they were pressing on the spinal cord. And since they can't grow through the bone, he said eventually they would have severed the spinal cord and it would have been over. And he said, but there was too much trauma to that spinal cord that I don't think that you're going to walk again. And Jason, for the next 32 days, every day without fail, there was a knock on my door. Are you Tiger? And somebody would come in the room and I would say, well, yes. Well, you don't know me, but I know so-and-so, know so-and-so, know so. Can we pray for you? And I was like, absolutely. And people praying for me, my physical therapist and my occupational therapist were both believers. And they would lay hands on me and pray over me before every session. And by the grace of God and the power of prayer, 32 days after surgery, I walked out of the hospital. And I had a walker, but I was walking. And my doctors and nurses had formed like a victory line like they do at the football games. And as I'm walking through the car, I get right in front of the doctor that told me I would probably never walk again. And I just looked over at him and I went, told you so. And of course, he's got tears in his eyes and I do. And my wife at the time had been a physical therapist. So when we got home, she knew everything for me to do. And probably about 6 weeks, I wasn't even using a walker anymore. I was back to being able to go on walks with the dog and hiking and playing church league softball and just back to full swing. And in 2005, my wife told me that she wanted to get a divorce and I don't want to say anything negative about her or anything on that matter. So it didn't work out. And so we got divorced and I continued ministry though. I continued speaking at churches. And of course there were some churches when they found out that I was divorced, wouldn't let me come and speak, which, you know, I will say there were no biblical grounds for the divorce, so I didn't really understand that part. But, you know, I was just like, okay, you know, God will open the doors that he wants me to go to, and I'll go through those doors. Mm-hmm. And just continued doing ministry, and God just continued opening doors, you know. And in 2010, I started substitute teaching as well after the divorce. And so if I wasn't traveling and speaking somewhere, I would substitute teach at Houston Christian High School and in Cypress School District, and just being around students as much as I could, man. And God was just doing awesome, awesome things through that. In 2010, started having real bad migraines, and they did an MRI again, and one of the tumors at the base of where the spinal cord and the brainstem, there was a ping pong sized tumor that had grown there, and that's what's causing the migraines. So, in 2010, we're in between C1 and C7 in the top vertebrae of my spinal cord. And the doctors told me that there were literally thousands of tumors all on my spinal cord and down both sciatic nerves. And man, over the last, you know, 2 years, God has really just blessed us with an electric wheelchair that somebody left me in his will. A friend of mine's father had ALS and passed away, and he had an electric wheelchair that, you know, does everything. It raises up. It basically will almost stand me up. Makes it a lot easier, you know, getting around, because my dad's almost 80. So, you know, pushing me in a wheelchair is getting really hard for him. So somebody donating this electric wheelchair was a blessing. And then last year I fell and broke my hip. And when I got out of the hospital, a friend of ours gave us a 1997 Chevrolet Tahoe. And then I had another friend that gave us the funds to put the electric wheelchair ramp on the Tahoe so that, you know, I can still go and speak at places now. You know, Dad loads me up in the wheelchair and, you know, we go. And it's just been amazing to see how God continues to work and to move, even though, you know, things are getting difficult. And I always said, you know, after that surgery in 2004 and the doctors telling me that I would never walk again and walking out of the hospital, you know, I've always said that, you know, no matter what happens, you know, from my chin down, I don't, as long as from my chin up, you know, I can speak, I can still share Jesus with people. You know, even if I can't speak, I'll figure out a way. And I think that, you know, that's really come into play lately because, you know, my body, you know, is not working very well. Like I said, I can't hold a baseball anymore. I can't write. I got to just learn how to do things differently now. But all that said, you know, God is still God and God is still good. And I still love and trust him. And I know that he's in control. And there's a song by Mercy Me, and the chorus says, bring me joy, bring me peace, bring a chance to believe, bring me anything that brings you glory. And I know there'll be days when this life brings me pain, but if that's what it takes to praise you, Jesus, bring the rain. Yeah. And that's been my man. When I first heard that song, I was like, man, Bart, you know, Millard, you know, he's in my brain because, you know, the way it starts, I can count a million times people asking me how I can praise you with all that I've gone through. That question just amazes me. Could circumstances possibly change who I forever am in you? Yeah. Maybe since my life was changed long before these rainy days, it's never really ever crossed my mind to turn my back on you, O Lord, my only shelter from this storm, but instead bring me closer to this time. And man, bring the rain. That's been my prayer. And, you know, we lost my little brother in 2005. And then 2018 was a really bad year because my oldest sister was killed in a car wreck in February. And then we lost my mom in October. Wow. And, you know, and I have people that, you know, they do ask me, like, you know, with all that's happening to you, you know, how can you still praise God? Like, you know, you have thousands of tumors, you know, you do a divorce, and all of those things are not good things. And I that doesn't change who God is. You know, bad things happen to good people all the time. We know that. And, you know, I still trust and know that, like I said, that God is in control. And I've kind of adopted Acts 20:24 as my life verse. And it says, however, I consider my life worth nothing if only I may finish the race and complete the task the Lord has given me, the task of testifying to the goodness of God's grace. And you know, that's my thing, man. And when I get to share with students, you know, I tell them that, you know, we can't control what happens to us, but we can control how we react to it.
Yes.
You know, we can turn our back on God because of it and become bitter, mm-hmm. or we can say, okay, God, you know, how are you going to use this to glorify your name? And we can turn to God and be better.
Right.
And so I tell students, you know, it's your choice. You can be bitter or you can be better. You know, you decide that. You know, I can't decide it for you. But for me, I choose to try to be better through it, no matter what it is. And, you know, and I also get to go into the difference between, you know, happiness and joy. You know, am I happy that I lost my mom, my brother, my sister? No, but I have joy because I know that they're all in heaven and I'll see them again someday. And man, I just pray that God just continues to use me, and as long as he has me on this earth. And it's, you know, God has been good. I can't complain.
Wow. Well, dang, Tiger. I mean, you know, I didn't even jump in at any time. There were several points I wanted to like kind of jump in and ask questions, but I didn't even want to stop you, because just hearing your journey of faith is it's beyond inspirational. And it's interesting too, because what I was reminded of is I'm reading, I've been studying a lot about James Stockdale, who was, you know, in the Hanoi Hilton, the Vietnam prison camp for over 7 years. And, you know, he talked a lot about Stoic philosophy as he got through it. And, you know, Stoic philosophy has so much to do, which it's interesting, because I believe that the Apostle Paul was probably one of the early Stoics. I mean, if you know, when he talks about he knows what it means to have have plenty, he knows what it means to be abased, but in all these things, nothing moves him. And, you know, it's a very Stoic, you know, idea. And to listen to you talk, it seems as though I'm interested in understanding. At a very young age, when you hear things like tumors, which automatically makes one's mind leap to cancer, and then you do have these dreams and you do have these hopes, like we talked about. I mean, I remember growing up, you know, loving baseball and having dreams and ambitions to play baseball beyond my high school years. Yes, I mean the faith journey is there, but how have you dealt in those, just as a mortal human being, those mental, what exercises, what times when you're all alone and you're really evaluating, how have you mentally prepared yourself to have this attitude, to have this stick-to-itness that you have? What are some things that you've done in that regard?
Well, I say it's the three F's. You know, my faith, of course, and my family and my friends. I've got an amazing support group, not just in my family, but in my friends that I know are praying for me and lifting me up all the time.
Right.
You know, and, you know, like I posted on, you know, Facebook, I put my, you know, prayer warriors mount up, and I know immediately I've got people, you know, praying. And so that's a huge thing. And another thing is, I go back to being in junior and in high school when our youth minister said, anchor your relationship with the Lord deep while you're young. Mm-hmm. And so I being in high school and making sure that I had my quiet time every day, staying involved in church and in a, you know, a group of fellow Christians that had the same, you know, focus as me in life, and surrounding me with that, you know, group of friends, and, you know, just really being able to fall in love with the Lord so deep when I was young that, you know, nothing would phase my, you know, love for him. And, you know, that's probably been, you know, the big thing is going back to that. If I hadn't bought into that anchor deep, you know, obviously older now and knowing that, you know, when a boat is in the water, it's going to be tossed and blown all over the place. And if I didn't have that faith, I probably wouldn't still be here. I mean, but the enemy does attack, man. Like you said, on those times when I'm alone, you know, it's just me and my thoughts and my dogs and God. There are times where I'm just like, okay, God, you know, I'm getting weary, you know, but I'm quickly reminded that, you know, as long as I'm breathing, God still has a plan for me here. Mm. And granted, I can't I can't go stage diving at a Newsboys concert like I used to. You know, I can't do all that. You know, I can't run around crazy with the kids at youth camps anymore. But I remember in, I believe it was 1998, I was at Super Summer at Mary Hardin Baylor, and Mercy Me was there, and Dave Busby. Do you remember Dave Busby? I don't know if you're familiar with him or not, but he was there speaking. And you know, with all of his health problems, he said, as long as I can breathe air, suck air through a straw, I will praise Jesus.
Wow.
And, you know, this is a guy, you know, he had, I mean, his health condition is way, and there was just something that I connected with on that too. And I was like, you know what, that's had, most people didn't know that I had the amount of tumors that I had. You know, people that I went to college with, you know, they didn't know until, you know, at the last part of, you know, college after I had the surgery in 95. But, you know, there are some people that I've known that had no idea that I had the positive attitude. And I get the positive attitude from my parents growing up, even though they weren't believers when I was young. You know, my dad never got mad. If I lost a baseball game or if I messed up on a pitch or you know, did something, my dad never scolded me, never got on to me. Was always just, hey, you know, you'll get them next time. You'll get the next game. You know, y'all didn't win the championship this year, but, you know, it's all good. And so even before, you know, they had Christ, you know, that positive attitude, that positive vibe, I'm very thankful, you know, for that, that's something that, you know, kind of laid a foundation of, you know, thinking positive and seeing the good and not the bad in things. And there are bad things that happen. It's unfortunate, but, you know, trying to step back and, like I said, okay, God, what are you going to teach me through this? You know, whatever this is, whatever storms we go through, you know, God is to be glorified. And, you know, when I have, you know, new issues with, as far as the tumors, if I have a new pain somewhere and my doctor wants to do another MRI or something, you know, I don't get down on that. I'm like, okay, that just means that there's somebody that God wants me to share with that's going to be at that hospital, that's going to be one of the MRI technicians or somebody in the waiting room. You know, I try to always carry that, you know, when I go down to MD Anderson, especially, you know, when I see, you know, kids, you know, I love that, being able to connect with them saying, you know, I have tumors also. Other people that have neurofibromatosis, and they ask me, how do you stay so positive? I tell them there's friends, but then also the fellow NF, the neurofibromatosis, they call it NF for short. And so I tell them, you know, fellow other people that have the same disorder that we do, that know what it's like, you know, connect with people that you have a like-mindedness with. And man, I not boastfully, but I can't tell you how many people that God has allowed me to share with, you know, their, you know, attitude has changed from, you know, woe is me, I have tumors, to, okay, I have tumors. Tumors don't have me. So it's been neat to see the way God has opened doors through that. And just, like I said, staying in the Word, you know, and keeping, you know, close contact with my faith, you know, family and friends has been huge.
I tell you what, I'm moving right now. If you see me moving around, because our connection was getting a little weak, so I'm going to try to move.
Oh, okay.
I was probably at the furthest point in the house from where I usually do the podcast. And so I want to see if this gets us a little better connection. So one of the things that you really reminded me of there, Tiger, was, so Viktor Frankl, who wrote Man's Search for Meaning, one of my favorite books, when he was in the concentration camp at Auschwitz, you know, he said it's when he determined what Nietzsche said as well, which is he who has a big enough why can overcome almost any how. And to listen to your story, you live out that your why, probably as much as anyone I've ever met in my life, is your faith in Christ. That is your, and it really, you know, whenever you were saying that every time something comes to you, whether it's another tumor, it's another pain, it's another setback, it's another surgery, that you find the why in that. And I think that for anyone listening, that that you finding your why to see what it's pulled you through. I mean, you know, we've got some big challenges right now in the world and in our country. And but I think anyone listening to this, anyone within an earshot of this this podcast would say that they pale in comparison to some of the things that you fought through. So, brother, well done, man. It is truly inspirational. And I think that you serve as a role model for not just the believer, for sure for the believer, but just for any individual out there doing life and facing obstacles. So, man, well done, brother.
Well, I appreciate it, brother. And like, you know, I just am so blessed that God has given me such a great support group. You know, I have some of the best friends and family, you know, in the world, man, and that's, you know, that's huge. So I always encourage people, you know, too, that, you know, get you a core group. You know, don't get people that are going to be, you know, why are you doing this? Why are you, you know, still going to church? I would have given up on God. I would, you know, if God really loves you, why would he let you go through this? And I'm like, no, you know. Because God loves me, I go through this. You know, because God has a plan and a purpose for my life, that I know that this is all for a reason. It's not just, you know, because. And, you know, several years ago, one of my big weaknesses is I tend to procrastinate a little bit. Several years ago, I started writing my book, kind of my story of my life, and I need to get back to that and get that finished. But I was praying. I was like, God, I want a way that if somebody were to, you know, ask me to, you know, give a 5-second, you know, testimony, you know, how could I do that in 5 seconds? You know, because I've had people ask me to come and share my story, and, you know, they say, well, you know, we only have 15 minutes. So you got 15 minutes to share your story. And I'm like, okay, but there's so much that God has done that it's hard to do that in 15 minutes.
Right.
So God gave me a one sentence, and it says, I consider it gain to go through pain if it lifts up his name. And that's kind of summary of it is, you know, if me getting to share Christ with somebody, MD Anderson, if it takes me having to go through having to have another MRI or more tests done or even another surgery, that's what I'll do, you know. And I'm just thankful that I have that, you know, positive attitude that God has just blessed me with being able to you know, keep my head up. And, you know, it you know, the last, you know, year with, you know, people with the, like you were saying, with things going on in the world and the COVID-19 and the, you know, the quarantine stuff. And I'm like, you know, since I'm not physically able to drive anymore, like I'm confined to my house quite a bit, unless, you know, I'm going somewhere speaking or whatnot, or, you know, dad wants to go somewhere or whatnot. But man, God blessed us most recently with some men from our church. We go to Magnolia's First Baptist, came over to our house. Man, they built this huge deck in the backyard. We live in a modular home, so it's kind of raised up. So we got a wheelchair ramp in the front, but in the back, there was just a block of, you know, bricks that are, you know, steps to go down into the yard. And of course, being in a wheelchair, I can't go outside, and I don't have children, my children have four legs. And so my dog, you know, I love my dogs and being out with them. And so now I'm able to, you know, get my wheelchair and go out in the backyard on this big, beautiful deck and be out there with my dogs. And, you know, that's one of the things that, you know, God blessed us with most recently was that, and just, you know, knowing that, you know, God meets our needs, man. You know, and when we need something, we also got to do is ask and pray, you know, and God gets us through, you know, those things, man. And you know, anybody that's listening, feel free to reach out to me, man. I'd love to, if anybody wants to chat, you know, one-on-one, or I'd be honored, man. Just, I don't know, you can share my website with on.
Yeah. Well, go ahead and go ahead and give the web address. And what's the best way to contact you, Tiger?
My email address is Tiger Kaufman. That's TigerCoffman at yahoo.com. Or my website is tigerkaufman.com. Or even my cell phone is 832-498-2742. And my phone is always open, man. I'm always eager to talk and share with anybody that, you know, maybe is going through some struggles and they just need some encouragement, man. I would be honored to talk with them and pray with them, and just allow God to be glorified through that.
Well, brother, I tell you what, thank you for this time. This has been, and congratulations on now being officially minted a Texas Titan. If there
thank
is
you,
anyone that deserves that title, then it's you, my man. I mean, I can't tell you how grateful I am for your testimony, for the time that you've taken with me and with this audience. I don't see how anyone, even in spite of some of the, you know, we had some little audio hiccups there because of the poor, I had some poor internet connection there for a while. Even in spite of that, brother, I think it's going to pale in comparison to the power of the message you delivered. So I really, really do appreciate it, Tiger.
Hey, man, I appreciate you giving me the opportunity, man. I'd love any time, man. I'd love to come back on another time if you ever need somebody. And even last minute, you know, hey, Tiger, I need somebody tomorrow. Brother, I'd be honored. Yeah. And I'm so thankful that Josh connected us, man.
Me too.
And, you know, his wife, Amanda, her family were, God used them in a huge way when I had that surgery in 95. Just, you know, Amanda and her two sisters and her mom coming to visit me, you know, when I got home from the hospital, and brought me a book, Angels by Billy Graham. And so, yeah, those are just one of the many, many, many people that God has, you know, placed in my path to just encourage me and bless me and lift me up, man. And so it's been an honor to meet you. And, man, I look forward to talking again.
Absolutely, Tiger. Well, that's a wrap on another episode of the Texas Titans podcast. Thank you so much for being here. This has been a Texas Titans Media production. If you will, please take the time to go out to iTunes and give us that ever-coveted 5-star rating. It would mean the world to me. Plus, go to jasonrightnow.com, sign up for the Vitruvian Letter, and most importantly, have an incredible rest of your day and week. Thanks for being here.